For over 6 years, Hank Thorpe hosted All of the Above Radio, the most intelligent, honest, and eclectic combo of music and talk that you never heard. But the more things change, the more things stay the same. Hank is back with a new version of the old scene. No more music, no more time constraints, but he still has great stories, great interviews, and more passion than a novel with Fabio on the cover. Once upon a time, Hank Thorpe was your bastion of good music, good talk, and full escapism. Now, Hank is your bastion for punchlines, passion, and perspective. Hank Thorpe, your former, present, and future favorite podcast host, presents all new, all different, but still, All of the Above.
To go after your dream is one thing. To inspire people is another. To go for your dream, inspire people, and do it where the rent is really cheap, that is pretty badass. Welcome to all new, all different, but still all of the above. New version of the old scene. A huge hello to anybody who is listening for the first time. A huge welcome back to anybody who has been listening for the last few months. And an equally huge thanks for sticking around to anybody who listened during the All of the Above Radio days. What remains true in any bit of content I have ever created, any show I have ever put together for you, and for myself, is that I find really fun people and really passionate people, and I bust my ass and fall all over myself to get them on these airwaves. If there's one thing I really, really love, is talking to super passionate people. People that are going after the thing they want, the thing that they see as necessary, the thing that they want out of the world. And it's so fun to hear them talk about how they got there, why they did it, what they're doing with it. It's just amazing. I've interviewed burlesque dancers, pole dance fitness instructors, brewers, cupcake makers, and today we will be chatting with a bar owner. Jessica's story is really badass, and her story is very similar to a story I'm going to tell you about on the back end. The narrative today is definitely going to be never too late, go after it, give it a shot. And one of the other narratives today is going to be what speaks to you. Two things that you're going to be thinking about as we go. Just leave those way in the back of your mind. For now, all I'm going to want you to do is sit back, listen, and enjoy. And I guess I should probably give you one little bit of information before we go any further. Maybe two bits of information, really. You should probably know, first of all, my name is Hank. Hey, how you doing? And I was privileged and lucky enough just a few short weeks ago to take a trip to Maui. Because at some point you're probably going to be listening to this interview and thinking, why is Hank talking to somebody from Maui? Does he know her? Short answer is, well, I do now. A few short weeks ago, after the insanity of North Texas's bad weather and power outages and water and pipes breaking and all that craziness, I was lucky enough to take a trip with my fiance and her family to Maui. And the last day of the trip, I was able to meet Jessica Everett of Esther's Fair Prospect. We had an amazing time. It's one of those bars that you go to, one of those moments you're having where you sit down and you think, okay, I'm just going to sit down for one drink. We'll go do something else. And the next thing you know, you've eaten one time and the conversation's so good, you keep drinking. And then you eat a second time and then the conversation keeps going and you keep drinking and you keep trying to find reasons to leave. And the only reason you have to leave is that you've gotten hungry for a third time. You've run out of things on the menu. And oh crap, you've got a flight to catch. If there's something that I absolutely love in this world is when you lose track of time. When the momentum starts rolling downhill and you lose track of what you were supposed to be doing or where you thought you needed to be. Because that moment that is stretched out becomes so good that that's all that matters. And so, as we were, after we left, my fiance and I, we just couldn't stop talking about the drinks, we couldn't stop talking about the experience, couldn't stop talking about Jessica. And as I tend to do, I got her card, we emailed back and forth, and here we are. So for any of you who have been to Maui, who have been to Esther's, you already know. For those of you on your way to Maui over the next couple months, you better find out. And to anybody who is just into a passionate person, telling really great stories, you're going to be happy to listen to this also. I'll go ahead and throw out my vitals real quick. If you wanted to find me, that's alloftheaboveradio@gmail.com. THEHRT3@gmail.com. I'm barely on there, but HANKTHORPE, that's me, Hank, how you doing? On Facebook Messenger, or you can find me on Instagram, Hank, hey, how you doing? No, seriously, that's my Instagram feed. Sit back, relax, enjoy. We are about to start talking to Jessica Everett from Esther's Fair Prospect in Wailuku in Maui, Hawaii. Enjoy, everybody. I'll talk to you on the other end. Going to go ahead and tell everybody, Jessica, what an operating partner does. So actually, I'm going to give you the option. Would you like to say what Esther's Fair Prospect is first, or would you like to say what the operating partner does?
Well, I'll say what it is first.
Okay, hit.
So Esther's Fair Prospect is a small tropical rum-focused bar on the island of Maui.
Okay, and I will just chime in real quick with the story of how I found this place. So I don't interview people I don't find interesting, and this is really the pinnacle of interesting. So it's the last day of my trip to Maui with my fiance and her family. We've dropped off the family. We are now trying to figure out what to do with 7 hours between, actually, heck, it was like 8 hours between dropping them off and flying home. And so we get down from, you'll have to help me with pronunciation because you're far more Hawaiian than me. We had just gotten done driving up Haleakala National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And we drove through a cute little town nearby, and it was time to get a drink. And my fiance just types in Bar Maui, and up comes this place. And so, for those of you from local DFW, you'll understand this concept. If you've ever been to the Manhattan Project Brewing, it's in an area where you kind of see like industrial or closed buildings or a gas station or like a half, a half occupied building. But as soon as you walk in, you are absolutely greeted with the most fun, warm, home-ish bar. And we were absolutely blown away by the whole experience. So to call Esther's Fair Prospect a tiki bar is, you're being modest. Let's just say that. So to say that you guys specialize in rum, please do expand.
Yeah, so we didn't want to be a tiki bar because we didn't want to have to fall into that very narrow category and only do tiki drinks. Tiki okay. drinks are a very specific style of drinks that have a very rich history. And if you're going to do a tiki bar, you have to do it right. You have to stick to that kind of narrow lens of just tiki drinks. And we didn't want to be that. We wanted to just have like a tiki inspired, like a nod to tiki, but have a little bit more freedom to kind of expand beyond that.
Okay.
Of course, rum being very heavily prevalent in tiki and also a passion of both my business partner and mine. It also makes a lot of sense for a tropical location, especially for Hawaii.
Yes.
Being that Hawaii has such a long-standing history of sugar production and sugar cane itself being one of the first crops that the native Hawaiians brought over with them. And also when you're on vacation, like, what do you think about drinking? You think about drinking rum, especially the Mai Tai,
yep.
when you come to Hawaii. So all those things kind of factored into what we wanted to have our little focus be on for Esther's.
And to your point, my fiance, the only time she drinks Mai Tais is when she's on vacation, and she has been privileged to be in Hawaii twice, and that's pretty much all she drinks unless we're at a brewery. But I will say, we have a copy of your menu. My fiance loves the sentimental items, and she grabbed one of your menus, and I had I had a sip of some of the mezcal there. I had, let's see, the stirred down Wailuku Town that was similar to an old fashioned. She loved the comfortably numb. So yes, there's rum drinks on. Oh, and my first drink I had was the Madame Butterfly, which people gave me the side eye when I said it was Japanese whiskey and matcha and egg white. They're like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's fun. That was one that that Suzanne, my business partner, came up with. Those are flavors that I personally would never, like, not a style of drink that I would come up with, but I really love it, and it's, like, it's awesome, and it sells so well. It's super fun, and I really like that drink.
And I love the concept of that, because as a bartender, especially a bartender, we'll say end of 2019, maybe even middle of 2019, to this moment that we are sitting talking in right now, one of the first things I hear when people walk up is, so how good is your old fashioned? And so at this point, I'm trying so hard to not, I love bourbon. I love an old fashioned, but if I'm going on vacation, I'm not a rum drinker, but I am going to try to drink something that isn't an old fashioned because you can get that anywhere.
But you should try a rum old fashioned.
So I've heard of that. And so if you were going to put together a rum old fashioned, how would you just magically whip one up right now?
Well, I mean, it's the same as an old fashioned, but you just sub in rum. It's actually super tasty, and it gives it like a little bit more of a tropical feel. Have you heard the Plantation pineapple rum?
I've heard of Plantation rum, not of pineapple.
So they make a pineapple rum, which usually we shy away from all flavored spirits in that way, but theirs is actually really cool. They just macerate like fresh pineapple in with their rum.
Okay.
I think they actually distill them together, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong on that. But it's just like 100% like rum and fresh pineapple, and it's super fun. But that in old fashioned is awesome. That's definitely a vacation drink.
Interesting. I mean, she wants to go back, so you, and you sure as heck don't have to sell me into going back to Esker. So we'll just set plans for that further down the road. So if you would, Jessica, can you go ahead now, and you mentioned your business partner, if you would just kind of bring her into the fold and tell everybody a bit of your story about how you started on the mainland and have ended up in Maui, and if you want to just keep going further into it, how Esker's came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am originally from Maryland, and I've been working in the restaurant industry since I was 14 years old, which is well over half my life now. And I moved out to San Francisco when I was about 22, 23. And I essentially expanded upon my resume. I'm not going to say that I lied on my resume, but I embellished my resume.
Sure.
And got a job bartending at this fine dining restaurant. And it was kind of when like the whole craft cocktail scene was really taking off in San Francisco.
Okay.
Where, you know, every place was starting to use fresh juice. Every place was starting to start doing classic cocktails well, was starting to create their own cocktails, was putting together cocktail lists on every menu. And I worked with this really crazy, talented woman who sort of like hazed me into this world of bartending, of like actually making good drinks as opposed to, you know, muddling a bright orange or a bright red cherry into your old fashioned. And it was awesome. So it was a lot of fun. And then she left the restaurant after like 2 months. And on days when it was slow, I had free rein for raiding the walk-in in the back. The chef was really nice. And he was super into seasonal ingredients. And in California, you can get pretty much the most amazing produce all year round. So there was always something super fun and interesting to work with. And when it was slow, they encouraged me to come up with new cocktails for the list. And so I had this like very brief introduction to good technique, which, you know, in retrospect, I wish it had been longer. But, and then I was just kind of thrown into be creative with flavors. And I love cooking. I've always loved cooking.
Yep.
And so for me, bartending was really fun and interesting, and I fell in love with it because it was like cooking, but with alcohol. You know, you're taking all these things like, oh, you've got kumquats in the back, let's do something with that. Oh, it's a bunch of white peaches today, you know, let's do something with that. You've got, I don't know, shishito peppers. Well, do something spicy. Like, it was super fun, and that place was very creative and interesting to me. They didn't, unfortunately, the restaurant was really good, but they did not last long.
Okay.
So I moved on from there and ended up bartending in San Francisco for 10 years and bar managing for about 7 years of that time. And loved it. And then through that lens of it, I fell in love with the world of spirits. And that to me is even more interesting. It's the fact that through this distillation process, you can come up with something that is so absolutely delicious and unique and interesting, such as like a lot of rums and mezcals and whiskeys and so I just really loved the industry. What I didn't love about San Francisco was the weather.
Okay.
There.
Yes.
Have you been there?
One time, summer of 2018, we ran the San Francisco Half Marathon.
Now,
I will say this. It was refreshing for me and my now fiance because we were training for this half marathon in North Texas, where unless you are running at 7 in the morning, it gets to be about 98 by the time the sun is up overhead at 8:30 in the morning. And so
for us,
when we got to San Francisco and it was that Sunday morning and the rain had just stopped, it was maybe 6:45 in the morning and it was 54. We were just like, oh my God, we can run in this. And by the time, because it was July 29th was the race. And by the time the race was over, it might have been 66. So
I think July 29th is usually the coldest day of the year. So
for us, it was great, but I have always, I have frequent, what is the ridiculous phrase? The coldest summer I ever had was the summer in San Francisco or something.
The coldest winter I ever experienced. There you go. Summer in San Francisco, yeah.
There you go. Well, go ahead.
Anyway, so yeah, San Francisco is a super fun, very vibrant, awesome city that I'm very happy to have spent time in there, but I swear to God, it never gets above 65. It is always between 55 and 65 degrees, and it is foggy and miserable. If you are like me, and someone who really loves being in warm climates.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always had this dream in my mind that I wanted to open a bar in a tropical location. And here I was in San Francisco, and I was like, well, this is not even anywhere close to tropical. We have like 3 warm days a year.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time visiting Maui. And one of my good friends from San Francisco she and I had worked together there. She had gone on to live in Maui for a few years and then moved around. She moved back to Florida where she's from and worked at this bar called Sweet Liberty. And then she moved up to Chicago and worked at this really iconic tiki bar called Three Dots and a Dash, and then spent some time in Denver. A really good friend of mine and I called her up one day and I said, Suzanne, I really want to open a bar in Maui. I just came back from a vacation there, and I feel like there's nowhere really good to get a drink. And I want to get out of San Francisco because it's cold, and there's too many good bars there. And I was like, do you think that this idea would work well on Maui? And she said, yeah, I think so. And so the next day she called me back, and she said, hey, I think I want to do that. Like, I've always thought about this, and I think I want to move back to Maui. Would you want to do it together? And that's how the relationship was born. So we took a trip out to Maui and went scouting for locations. And we were looking at some of the more touristy-driven towns.
Mm-hmm.
But the rents there were just ridiculous. And all of the spots that we were looking at were enormous. And we really wanted something small. So we found this very charming little town called Wailuku, which has a very kind of, you know, for Maui, a very urban kind of artsy hipster vibe.
Yep.
And we found a space, and the space is in this building that's owned by a nonprofit for performing arts. So that's really cool. The town has like several theaters in it already. There's a lot of artists that have their shops there. And it just kind of like felt like it was meant to be. So we got our space, and then Suzanne started dating this guy that is super talented woodworker, and he builds a lot of big projects at Burning Man, designs and builds them, and he said he wanted to come out and build the bar for us his father, so we had a little father-son action.
Jeez.
Yeah, and then we helped, you know, Suzanne helped with construction a lot, and I helped whenever I could, and we got it done. It took us about 2 years to build it, but we got there eventually. And then COVID happened.
At this point, it's a 2-year process to like do the moving and the creation and all of this. So how much, while they were doing the woodwork, were you working on the structure of the concept of the food, of the drink menu? How did you, and was it Suzanne you said?
Uh-huh.
How did the synergy of you and Suzanne start to work as this was all getting done?
We were tackling all like the stupid things like paperwork, the mountains of paperwork you have to file with Maui County to just get everything approved. We were both working full time jobs as well. As far as like the creative side of like the food and the drinks, we probably in our minds went through several different variations of what we wanted to put on that menu and rejected some ideas and embraced others. But most of the cocktails came about, we literally just got together one night, like a week before we were going to open, and we had some of our friends show up and we put together the cocktail list that night. And it was actually really fun because I've done a lot of cocktail lists before, and I've always done it by myself, and it's very hard, and you get frustrated, and your palate is overworked, and you can't taste things anymore, and you get creative burnout.
Yep.
But working with her is really easy because, you know, you have somebody that you trust. You'd be like, okay, well, I have this concept of a drink. What do you think? And like, oh, I really like it. Or, oh, maybe tweak it this way. Try this a little bit. Or, no, we already have too many mezcal drinks on the menu. We don't really have room for that one, you know. But it was really fun and very easy for us to come together and create drinks. And we kind of split the menu in half. And she pretty much did about half the drinks. I think I did half the drinks. And we really loved what each other had come up with. And it's funny because I think that some of her favorite drinks on the menu are the ones that I originally came up with, but my favorite drinks on the menu are the ones that she came up with. So it's kind of a nice little symbiosis.
That's you answered my next question. I was going to say, what is your current favorite that you created? But I guess I should ask her technically. What is your favorite drink on the menu?
Oh man, that's so hard. I go back and forth.
Yes.
I mean, probably just the daiquiris. The daiquiris are so delicious.
Well, that was easy.
Yeah, I like all the drinks. Like, I love the Dirty Birdie. It's the Surf and Go Naked is really fun. It's an IPA caramel with gin and Lilikoi and orange, and then topped off a little IPA. But it's just something about like a hop characteristic with the Lilikoi works so well. So I really love that one. The daiquiris are awesome, though. They're very simple. For a daiquiri, it's just classic rum, you know? 2 ounces of rum, 3/4 ounce of lime, 3/4 ounce of cane syrup.
Mm-hmm.
But the cane syrup that we used, my boyfriend actually makes it. He harvests Maui sugar cane and then presses the juice from it and then just reduces it until it's got the same amount of sugar as a 1-to-1 simple syrup.
Oh, wow.
But it's got so much more flavor. It just tastes like grass. It actually has like an acidic quality to it as well as just being sweet. So it adds so much depth to that drink. And I think that what attracts me to those drinks is that they are simple, but they let the ingredients shine through, and they're just really good ingredients. You know, fresh lime juice, the cane syrup, and then our delicious rums.
Now allow me to fall into the nerd rabbit hole for just one quick second.
Oh, I love this rabbit hole.
Would you please tell everybody listening right now, you just mentioned the IPA caramel. If you would just kind of give people a bit of a feel as to some of the syrups you make in-house, the process of using egg white, just if you would just. I don't know how many people walk into a bar and understand how much effort can go into just a simple drink. I want people to hear just how intricate some of the stuff you are doing is at Esther's Fair Prospect. I want people to get a genuine clue of the high-level stuff you guys are doing.
No, that's a great question, because there's, I think it was maybe Imbibe just published an article, and it was called The True Cost of a Cocktail.
Okay.
And it was like talking about why craft cocktails are expensive and why they should be even more expensive and all of the steps that go into that.
Seriously.
And honestly, we have somebody just doing drink prep for the most part, drink and food, but it's mostly drinks. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we have somebody there for 8 hours a day just prepping everything that goes into the drinks.
That's awesome.
We're a very small bar, so it's like there is a lot that goes into it. And we make everything in-house, with the exception of cane syrup, which my boyfriend is making for us. He's starting his own cocktail syrup company.
Ooh.
We don't have a cane press at Esther's, unfortunately. But everything else that we make in-house. So, like our orgeat, we get the almonds and we grind them up and we make a natural, simple syrup, then combine it with that and let it sit for a day and then strain it off. With the IPA caramel, it's super fun. That one, we take the Big Swell IPA from Maui Brewing and add sugar to it and then reduce it down until the sugar caramelizes. We press all of our juices every single day. Everything is fresh. What else do we do? Like, we have that matcha syrup, which is super tasty. That one's a little bit easier. We make this awesome strawberry rosemary syrup. We have Our milk punch takes a couple days to make. It's fun, but it's definitely a lot of work that goes into every drink. So you think about, like, you know, where you're going to a bar and you're just combining, like, vodka and soda together. There's not a whole lot of back-end work that goes into that. But when you have a cocktail that has, you know, four different house-made ingredients in it, there is a lot of work and labor that goes into it.
Would you be able to divulge to the listening audience right now? So I'm looking at your menu, and your milk punch costs $15. Would you be able to divulge what that drink should actually cost, or is it almost right at cost?
No, if I were to actually cost that one appropriately, it'd probably be about $18.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But that's not, like, thinking about the labor on that one. That one is pretty labor intensive. But that is definitely one of our higher cost drinks. But we don't want to. I don't believe in charging that much for a cocktail. You know, we want, especially because where we're located, it's mostly local clientele. We get a lot of service industry people in here, and we offer, you know, service industry discounts. We really do want to make ourselves affordable to the average working person. So much of Hawaii is not. Much of the hotels are, you know, minimum $18 for a drink, and it's not necessarily the best drink. And we didn't want to be that. So there are things like our, you know, the daiquiris, for example, are a relatively low-cost item for us. And we sell a lot of them, which allows us to cost down some of the more costly cocktails.
So the area that Esker's is located, like you said, it's a little more urban, it's a little more working class, it's a lot of service industry. Would you be able to throw out a percentage of what your clientele is when it comes to locals versus vacationers?
Oh, it's like 98% local right now.
I cannot express to you how lucky I feel that my fiance found you on Google.
That
I got to do the local flair. That's what I want to do on vacations. And true story, I'm gonna actually vent real quick, just because I need to. So the bar I work at, people have known I was in Maui because I was gone for a week, for 9 days from work. Mm-hmm. And one of my somewhat devout regulars said, "Oh man, what was your favorite day?" And so I proceeded to tell them about the day that I was at Esker's. The fact that, and this is a bit sentimental, but it's because it was just me and my fiance going on yet another adventure. We found an amazing food truck park with a bargain of a poke bowl. Like a poke bowl that cost $18, but actually felt like it was worth $18.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we went up that freaking terrifying mountain in a rental van and came back down and lived. And then we found a small town, and then we found a bar that felt like us. And this chick had the nerve to say, "That's it? That's the most fun you had?" And I wanted to be like, "Bitch, I'm so sorry. I didn't skydive off a mountain to entertain you." But the fact that you just said it's 98% clientele is locals, that is awesome. I love it. Now let me just go ahead and piggyback into the next thought. So far, you said you opened a little bit after COVID, and you have lots of locals coming in. How has the community taken to this place so far?
So far, it's been really great. It is, you know, we do want to get more visitors coming in, but I think that one of the things is that when we opened, there weren't any visitors on the island. It was still before they had opened up travel. But yeah, the community has definitely embraced us. Wailuku is such an awesome little town, and it feels like everybody knows each other, and it's just a lot of really awesome people. And there actually are, like, several bars in that town. It's probably one of the more densely barred towns. On the island, especially for one that's not intensely touristy, like Lahaina or Kihei. It's been really good. I think that people were excited to have something new there, and I think that, you know, so few times do the towns that aren't frequented by tourists, do they get something like new and exciting opening for them. So I think that is something that they were pumped about. Plus, people, you know, we opened in August, people were desperate to get out of their houses.
Yeah.
They really needed a drink.
So I wanted to go back and get something real quick. The fact that you have your drinks priced, we'll say anywhere between $10 and $15.
Mm-hmm.
I work at a bar that charges $15 for a quote-unquote top-shelf margarita. So drinking was the only thing in Maui where I was just like, oh, that doesn't cost anything. That's not a big deal. I was absolutely... I thought that was kind of fun. So just real quick, I want to just kind of like do a quick palate break, and then we'll get back into all the deep questions. You have Miller High Life on your canned beer menu. Tell everybody about that.
It's the champagne of beers. Best beer ever. We serve it in a coupe. It's great.
And there is no joke in your voice. You love that beer, don't you?
I do love that beer. You know what? This is probably where we differ, because I know that you are into very good, very crafty beers. And I am a shitty, light beer kind of person. I love Mexican beer with salt and lime, and I like High Life and just crap beer.
That's fantastic.
I'm not into IPAs. I'm not into very fancy Belgian beers. Like, I can appreciate, I can take a sip and appreciate it, but it's a good beer. But if I had to choose, if I had to just drink a beer, it's going to be High Life for Pacifico all day long.
That's too fun. That is absolutely awesome. And I've said over and over again, like, the older you get, your palate changes, your taste change. At some point, you can appreciate, like, real high-quality food, but you want to just take it back to your roots every now and then and just get some Taco Bell or some Burger King. It's nice,
yeah.
It's nice that you stay grounded.
Thank you.
So I wanted to just cover something you mentioned about Wailuku real quick, and then we'll move into something else. So you were saying that Wailuku is the area where there's a lot of art and artists and
mm-hmm.
nonprofits. So that part of town in local DFW is the Bishop Arts District, or is Deep Ellum, where, and thank you for saying it so I didn't have to feel bad saying it, it's a hipster area where it's a lot of small buildings packed real tight with each other. It's really terrible to park, but you know you're going to find a spot with good cocktails and an elevated food menu. So now it's a little bit quiet in Wailuku from what I saw. Do you think about 3, 4, 5 years from now, that's going to be one of the spots to be?
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely there. So Wailuku has a very interesting history on Maui. Back before Maui became a really big tourist destination, Wailuku was the town. It was the only place that was developed. It was where everybody lived and everybody stayed. And any visitor coming to Maui stayed in Wailuku. And the reason behind that is that is where all of the sugar companies were based.
Okay.
So the only people really visiting Maui were like the sugar barons and their families, and they all stayed in Wailuku because that was the town that had all the industry. And it is still the county seat because that's where the companies would base. And they had several sugar mills there. And then they had a railroad that went down to the harbor in Kahului, and that's how they'd ship off the sugar. So in the 1940s, 50s, they started developing the west side a little bit more, Kanapali area, and that became like the resort center, and that is where people, after the sugar industry was already on the decline and a lot of the sugar mills were shutting down, and then they developed like this touristy resort area of the island, and that's where people would go and stay. And Wailuku sort of fell into disrepair, and for a long time was known as like a really bad area of Maui. If there is ever a really bad area of Maui, which I find humorous, you know, having been to places like New York and Chicago and lived in San Francisco, that
sure.
Anybody would consider a portion of Maui to be a bad area or a crime-ridden area. You're like, really?
Yeah.
Like, this isn't bad at all. But yeah, that's how it was seen. It was seen as just like there's a lot of problems with homelessness, there's a lot of problems with drugs, there's a lot of problems with crime, which, again, is all very relative to a small, sleepy island, which
yeah.
really, you know, it's not like by city standards. And the county itself, because it still is the county seat, finally decided they wanted to start revitalizing that area. So a lot of the architecture there is still original from the 1930s and 40s, and it's super cute. And it's historic, since they're a historic town, so they have like building codes on that, so you can't really develop in a non-historic way. And the county really wanted to kind of revitalize this area, so they started doing a lot of initiatives. They started hiring artists to do street art. They started to incentivize businesses to go in there. They're doing a big parking structure and community structure that's going up there. And we got in there like kind of right when they decided to start doing this, which was really perfect timing for us, because it's also, you know, it was a place where rents were affordable on Maui, which is very rare.
Yep.
And so, you know, and I think that's why there is a lot of art there, is that it's where the artists can afford to open a shop, you know, if they're not an established artist where they're charging, you know, $5,000 a piece and can afford a gallery on Front Street, they'll be on Wailuku.
It's awesome. And so would you be considered one of the earliest bars to be there, just kind of in this, what's going to be the new boom? Will you be kind of one of the tent poles for Wailuku?
We were the second bar to open in Wailuku, the historic area. So Wailuku's kind of split. There's this area called Market Street in Main, which is where we are. That's kind of like a little historic downtown area. And then there's Lower Wailuku, which kind of stretches down towards the water. And there are a ton of bars down in Lower Wailuku, and they are local, like local. And they are awesome. And that's what I mean. Like, you could do a really legit bar crawl through Wailuku right now.
Really?
So we were the second bar to open in downtown Wailuku. There was this bar called Y Bar, is this bar called Y Bar, that was around the corner from us, that opened up maybe like 3 years ago or so. And they had just opened when we came to scout out locations for our bar. And everybody, it was the talk of the island. They were so excited that a bar had opened in Wailuku. And so they kind of paved the way for us. But they're a very different style of bar than we are. So it's a really nice symbiosis. They do a lot of live music, and they're kind of like a place you're going to go get a beer and a shot and watch somebody sing, which is amazing.
Yeah.
They used to, before COVID, stay open later. Before the most recent COVID restrictions. Stay for later, so, you know, we close at either 10 or midnight, and they'd stay up until 2, so we could go over there and get a drink after work, or people would come in and have a drink at our bar before they go over to Y Bar, mm-hmm. and it's a really nice combo. So we weren't the first ones paving the way. Y Bar did that for us, but I think that, to me, there's so much strength in numbers, because if you're going to drive somewhere to go out for the evening, you want more than one option. You're not going to just come to our bar and sit there. You want to be able to bounce around a little bit, at least I do. You know, be like, oh, that was awesome. Now let's go get food somewhere. Now let's go get another drink somewhere. Okay, now we'll come back to Esther's. So what I would like to encourage people to do if they're not driving is to start at our bar and then go to Y Bar.
Okay.
And then go follow down the lower main bars. There's like karaoke bars down there. There's a couple of hostess bars down there, which is sort of the closest that we get to strip clubs, but they're not okay. even close to that. So it's a very fun, very colorful area. And I think that we got in definitely on the beginning. It's going to develop a lot more. Since we've opened, there have been a couple of restaurants that have opened that are really awesome. And I think that there's going to be a lot more exciting development there.
That's awesome. And speaking of the symbiosis, I've noticed, I was looking at your Instagram feed, and I've seen that the door swings both ways. You have done pop-ups at other locations, and it looks like there's been chefs that have come in and done pop-ups at Esther's. Could you tell the world a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's been awesome. So we have hosted two different chefs on the island. One of them was the chef of this place called the Mill House, which unfortunately was a casualty of the pandemic, which is really tragic because it was far and away one of the best restaurants I've ever been to, and definitely the best restaurant on Maui.
Wow.
And it still is heartbreaking that it's gone. But he and his partner started their own kind of private chef company. And are eventually going to open a brick-and-mortar spot. But they've done two pop-ups with us now where they sell tickets in advance, and it's like a 5-course tasting menu. And those have been really fun because we actually did a 5-course cocktail pairing with that tasting menu, which was super fun because you go and you have like dinners like that, and it's usually a wine pairing and not usually a cocktail paired with each course.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been incredibly fun, and we love them. I love partnering with them. They're super talented people. And that's sort of a break from us being just sort of a casual neighborhood bar to kind of get to do something a little bit fancier, a little bit more crazy technique, a little bit like more out there with the cocktails. So that was really cool, and I hope that we are able to provide them a space to pop up and to collaborate with them going forward more.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did one, two other actually pop-ups with two other chefs, I forgot. One was with a guy who started a taco shop out here, which Mexican food on Nelly is a little hard to come by, and it's not that great when you do come by it.
I believe it.
And so he opened this place called Tight Tacos, which is awesome. He is originally from Oregon, and well, he's Mexican, but he's lived in Oregon. Tight Tacos, everyone loves it. So we had a pop-up with him making tacos at our spot one night, which was craziness. It was super busy. It was one of our busiest nights ever.
Nice.
And then we also partnered with two local chefs that just opened a ceviche food truck.
Yes.
And since we have ceviche on our menu, we had like a little ceviche off to see who did it better.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really fun. And then we've done several off-site events as well. We have gone up to the now twice in the last 2 weeks. We've gone up to the West Side to do some pop-ups at one restaurant there and then one brewery there. And we've also done a pop-up at a brewery down on our side of the island. Just to kind of like, it's a fun way to sort of get your name out to people that you wouldn't normally come across.
Yep.
There's a lot of word of mouth on Maui. We call it the coconut wireless. So things get around. But even with that, there's still people that I come across that haven't heard of us and don't know that we're open. So just getting out of Wailuku into areas of the island where different people live has been really great to get exposure for what we're doing down there.
So, Jessica, I'm going to ask you this is sort of a heavy question, sort of not. So, just from the story you've told, you grew up in Maryland, moved to San Francisco, decide you want to open something up on your own. So, I repeat, sort of heavy, sort of not. Do you ever look at yourself in the mirror or reminisce about your story and where you're at and think, damn, at some point I'm going to inspire somebody to do something just like me?
Oh, I hope so.
Good.
I hope so because I, you know, my inspiration comes from these amazing people that I worked for along the way. I was very fortunate to work for two of the larger restaurant groups in San Francisco. And they are both, you know, run by people that had just worked in the service industry for a long time and had started their own company. And then from those two companies, the people that I worked with, the ones that were the managers that I worked under, they went on to start their own thing. And so I think that I really hope that I inspire people to follow their passion and start their own project.
And before I forget, can you remember the first cocktail you made back when you were raiding the walk-in at the in San Francisco?
I do. And it's actually it's one that I've, it was one of the flavor combinations that still to this day I really love. And it's a little strange, but I did it at the very beginning of my time in San Francisco. I put it on a menu, and then I actually reused it on a menu towards the very end of my time in San Francisco. It was vodka, Valencia oranges, lime, tarragon, and a little bit of simple syrup. Oh, and I actually used it on another menu in between. So there's something about like the citrus, the tarragon and the Valencia orange that I really love. And that was something where, you know, you don't see tarragon used in cocktails very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one that I think that when I first started messing around with flavors that I discovered and I loved it, and that's someone to this day that I still love. I've definitely done cocktails that I thought at the time were good, and in retrospect were probably not that good.
Really?
Yeah. But this is one that I really like those flavor combinations.
And before I forget, can you tell everybody what the significance is of the name of Esther's Fair Prospect?
Yeah, so that goes back to our rum focus. So our working title was Muck and Dunder, which doesn't quite roll off the tongue as easily. Mm-hmm. But essentially it's a reference to Jamaican rum production. Suzanne and I, in our love of rum, we really love Jamaican rum because they produce what's called high ester rums. So they have these very intense, funky, fruity flavors to them. And Jamaican rum also, by law, they can't add anything to it after distillation. So you know that when you're getting a Jamaican rum, it's just pure rum. It's not, and they didn't add sugar to it, they didn't add flavoring, they didn't add anything. So to us, those are two things that we really admire, because rum is pretty much the Wild West. Rum can be made in any country in the world, and there really aren't any international laws regulating what you do with it. Except in some countries, there are. So Jamaica is one of those countries. And Jamaica's history of rum production is fascinating, in that they use basically what was sort of a sour mash style, which they called dundering, which means they take whatever's left over in the still from the last run and throw that into their fermentation pits to kind of jumpstart the fermentation process.
Similar to sourdough or certain types of whiskey.
Yeah, we're Jack Daniels, so the same thing. And then the other part of that is that they ferment in what was called a muck pit, which was a big hole that they would dig in the ground, and they'd throw in the very worst dregs of molasses that you couldn't sell to anybody. And then they put in the stillage from the last run. And all these things are kind of stripped of organic matter to ferment, which is what you need to ferment. You know, you have your yeast is going to eat the sugars, and it basically poops out alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But you need that sugar and those things to jumpstart the fermentation. Otherwise, the yeast is never going to live. So there's a legend that we found in this old rum book about how the Jamaican planters used to throw all sorts of weird stuff in there to start the fermentation process, like rotting fruit, sometimes a whole rotting goat head.
Whoa!
Which is where our logo comes in. That's why we have a goat skull in our logo.
Yeah.
They said they would throw like the contents of their own chamber pots in there because they didn't want the slaves at that time dipping in and drinking the like slightly alcoholic fermenting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It just really awful, disgusting, terrible history, and probably most of that is not true. But out of that grossness came this like really delicious, interesting rum that has all these intense flavors to them. So that's something that we thought was super fascinating. That's where we originally were Muck and Dunder for the dundering in the muck pits, but that didn't sound very pleasant. So we decided to name it Esters, after the high esters that are produced in this rum. And the Fair Prospect is a town in Jamaica, but it also means you have a good view. So we have a really lovely view of that Yaw Valley, if you look up the street. And it kind of worked out. So we figured everybody would call us Esters for short, and it's someone's name, so it's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And last thought I will throw at you. Can you talk more about the Maui Rum Society and your connection to it?
Yeah, so that's a project that we're still working on. We're doing it on Mondays at Esther's. We're featuring a different rum every week. And we're also have had a couple, well, we've had one producer come in so far to talk about his rum. And the vision, of course, would be to have at least once a month a different rum producer from anywhere in the world come in and talk about their product. And then we run drink specials with that product. So you get to try the rum by itself and then try an iconic cocktail that's made with that style of rum. So, you know, for most things, it's probably going to be a daiquiri. But if you have someone coming in from Martinique, we'll feature a tea punch with their rum.
Okay. And, okay, so two last things. I swear these are the last two things. First off, just another palate cleanser. How fun was it to do the tasting with the pop-up chefs to figure out the drink pairing?
Oh, super fun. Oh. If I could just have that as a job for the rest of my life, That would be amazing.
Seriously. So here is, I think this is my final question until you say more interesting stuff and I want to piggyback some more. Do you feel that there is a significance to put out there that Esther's Fair Prospect is owned and run by women?
Yeah, I mean, I think that to me it's not the most important part, but it definitely is an important part. And it is funny, I work, we have three other bartenders that we work with, and they're all men. And a lot of times when I'm working with the men, I hear people ask them, they're like, oh, is this your bar? Do you own this place? Which is kind of funny that there, I think there still is a little bit of an inherent bias to see bars and the realm of bars as being very male and very masculine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is interesting and important, but definitely not the most important part.
Okay, so let's go ahead and just ask the follow-up question. What is the most important?
About Astros?
Yeah.
Well, I think to me that's a very multifaceted thing. But what really like makes me happy about it is taking everything that I've learned in this journey that I've taken through the restaurant bar industry, and applying that and seeing people appreciate it. You know, to see people from the community come in and say, "Oh wow, I've never had a drink like this," or "Oh wow, this is so different than all the other bars around." I think that to me is very gratifying. It's something where, you know, I love doing this, and to be able to share that passion with other people and see them love it too is super cool.
Or somebody on vacation. Can't forget that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, and we're definitely seeing more visitors coming in, which is good. I like that.
Now, if you would, just real quick, give everybody the vitals on how to find Esther's Fair Prospect, what if they're in Maui, and how to find them on social media.
So our social media is at Esther's Maui on Instagram, and then Esther's Fair Prospect on Facebook. And we are in Wailuku, which is about 10 minutes from the airport. If you're driving up towards Lahaina, it's directly on the way. If you're driving towards Kihei, it's a little out of the way, but not by far. And we're right close to this place called Iao Valley, which is really gorgeous, gorgeous state park that kind of goes into the middle of the West Maui Mountains. And I always encourage people when they come to Maui to definitely check it out. There's a little bit of hiking to do. It can be a very short nature walk, or you can actually hike up the river. And they've got all these kind of like dammed up pools you can swim in, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. So I say if you're visiting, definitely go and check that out, and then come get a drink at our bar afterwards.
This is how I swear we will end this conversation. Have you ever considered doing your own podcast to talk about the Rum Society, or to talk about what the kind of things you like to do? Have you ever thought, as a person who is so experienced in the restaurant industry, have you ever thought to do just a little 25-minute podcast once a week to talk about your favorite cocktail or your favorite rum or your favorite thing that's going on in the bar scene in Maui?
You know, not until this moment, but now that you bring it up, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It's not a terrible idea. Just get you a cheap little setup. And you could paint it up as a staff meeting. Stick a multi-directional microphone in the middle of one of your tables, and just have a 30-minute roundtable conversation over a beverage, and just cast it out into the world. It would be a really fun supplement to what Esker's is doing. It would be such a fun like extra piece to the personality of the place, for which it has a ton.
Well, that's a great idea, and maybe we should look into that, and then we can interview you. That'd be hilarious. Awesome.
I have no problem whatsoever talking about myself, so please let's just get this.
Perfect.
Let's get this all rolling. So
I love it.
So Jessica, I want to say an enormous, enormous thank you for taking the time. I know you are 5 hours behind me. It was very sweet of you to ask, So are we going to be on Zoom or over the phone, knowing that it's 9 o'clock, or it was 9 o'clock in the morning when we got started in Maui? I was not going to have you put on makeup or even a shirt that you want. And hell, you might still be in bed. You could be running.
You know, no, I moved to a chair, but I just needed to know whether or not I needed to brush my teeth.
That was highly optional. I'm not going to know either way. I cannot express to you how fun that interview was. We talked for a little over an hour in total. And if anybody was listening to my previous episode that I put out right around the end of January, I'm on Spotify, by the way. Just either search All New, All Different, All of the Above, or search my name, Hank Thorpe, H-A-N-K-T-H-O-R-P-E. Hey, how you doing? If you were listening to that episode that I put out the end of January about the whiskey collection and how me being a collector has perpetuated throughout my life, if there's one thing you heard in that episode is that, there's a sound in the background that I didn't take into account or didn't appreciate just how much it would be present. All you heard on this episode was the clicking of a pen every now and then. By the way, that episode is really good and very much worth the listen and worth sitting through the unfortunate sound you may hear. I'll leave that up to you to go figure out. It's a great episode. Go check it out. So I wanted to go back and get something just real quick, and I wanted to clean up two things. I really appreciated when Jessica threw down the word hipster, because I didn't want to use it. When we walked in there, it had so much of a hipster vibe, from the music to the decor to the glasses that they bought specifically from local thrift stores. It all had such a great feel to it. And I mean, it had a hipster feel to it, from the craft cocktails to the super elevated tapas. Just the whole thing. And I'm not even gonna lie, the hipster vibe speaks to me, which we'll get to that in just a second. So something else I wanted to clean up. The little vent I had in there talking about how the Saturday, our final day in Maui, was my favorite day. The person I was talking to, so the husband and wife duo I was talking to about that kind of seemed almost put off by the fact that I said that was my favorite day. Let me just give you just a quick background on them. They're ridiculously nice people, but they are the consummate adrenaline junkies. They skydive, I think it's maybe anywhere between 25 to 35 weekends a year. And he proposed to her as they were getting ready to either base jump or jump out of a plane. They own their own parachute packs, at least two each, because you can't have just one. There are different types of parachutes. This is things I've learned as their bartender for the better part of 2 years now, on Friday and Sunday. So when I tell you that they were kind of like let down by me telling them that spending a day driving up a hill to a park, eating at a food truck park, and going to a bar was my favorite day, it for them it makes sense. Doesn't take away the fact that I was a little bit annoyed, but at the same time, it makes all the sense in the world. Of course, an adrenaline junkie would be weirded out by the fact that I spent time on the ground and had a great time. And I had, by the way, I may very well get on these very airwaves and talk to you more about the trip. But today, the only thing that's important for you to know is that Maui was phenomenal. It's funny, the first day and a half I was there, I was just like, oh, this is nice. When you're just in the little area of Kahana where there's just hotels slash condos or timeshare resorts, it's just a quaint little area. It's coffee shop, a couple of convenience stores, a couple of rental places, McDonald's over there. And it looks a lot like Merle's Inlet, South Carolina. It looks a lot like Gulf Shores, Alabama. It looks a lot like insert Mexico area, resort area here. But as soon as you get onto a boat and get in the water for a snorkeling tour or do a whale watching tour, as soon as you put your head, underwater and see just how brutally clear the water is and how you feel like you're in an aquarium because the fish are so multicolored and the sea turtles are 3.5 feet away from you, that's when it starts to feel like the hype. And I will quickly, without blink, tell you that the black sand beach on the road to Hana, it's one of the most beautiful things I have ever seen. And my fiance and I, when we were figuring out what our wedding venue would be, we were toying with it. She said, you know, I just don't think I'm a beach wedding person. I don't like the idea of sand in my toes. I don't like the idea of the wind doing things to my hair. I don't like the idea of feeling salty later. I was like, okay, not a problem. Standing on the black sand beach at the road to Hana, that was the moment that I said, oh, this is the beach people are talking about when they want to have a beach wedding. Granted, that beach is really little and the tide is so strong, you could probably realistically fit maybe like 8 to 10 people. So you pretty much would have the officiant, you, your soon-to-be spouse, and like two witnesses on each side, maybe three. Which, if it was your second or third marriage, totally get that. But your first one, you want to have people around to take in the moment. But in that moment, I got it. All of, and yet, going back to one of the things I wanted to keep in the back of your head, for as much as I love that trip to Maui, and for as much as I would go again, my fiance wants to go again, and I would go again. For as much as I loved that trip, for as amazing as it was, for as fun as it was, Maui didn't speak to me. And anybody that's been on a few trips, or really just kind of occasionally gives into their like whimsical or, I won't say spiritual, but anybody that kind of gives in to that side that keeps logic quiet, you know when something is speaking to you. And Maui didn't speak to me. Maui welcomed me with open arms. It was phenomenal. But it didn't speak to me. And one of my other bar regulars that I told about the trip, when I told him that Maui didn't speak to me, and that Philadelphia does, he looked at me like I kicked his puppy with steel-toed boots. He just had this look of absolute disgust. And I'm not sorry when I say that Maui didn't speak to me. But I also want people to know just how absolutely amazing the trip was. And if you ever have the time and money, and by the way, the stimmy helped me a ton. I'm going to use the young person's phrase and just let you know, I don't have it like that. Anybody who knows me or anybody who doesn't know me, you all need to know, I don't have it like that. the STEMI helped me a ton. But I highly recommend you go to any of the Hawaiian Islands. If you and I'm being told that the big city experience is on Oahu or on the Big Island. If you want something a little quieter, check out Maui. If you want something quieter than that, apparently you go to Kauai. I have not been. I'm not familiar. And something else I want you to do, and here's the other thing I want you to hold in the back of your head, is think about what you would be doing if you weren't stuck in your comfort zone. What dream are you getting ready to pull the trigger on? What thing do you want to follow? It was really fun to listen to Jessica talk about how many different are being in San Francisco and doing well. And by the way, just you could tell her trajectory in San Francisco that she could have very easily ended up being the GM of a high dollar or something or other, or the bar manager of a network of bars. She'd be one of those people you ended up seeing on TV doing that specialty cocktail with this liquor on a Bacardi commercial or something like that. But she chose to do something different. She chose to go for what she wanted. And here's a really ridiculous Pinterest phrase that I'm just going to throw out at you. And I'm sure you've heard it before, but the comfort zone is where dreams go to die. And Jessica chose not to stay in the comfort zone because apparently it was a little too cold for her. She's not the only person that said San Francisco is cold. It's a real thing. I am not making fun in any way, shape, or form. I am, and I'm genuinely happy for her, only knowing her just a little bit, but I love when anybody goes after it, when anybody leaves the comfort zone, when anybody goes after what they want. And by the way, I want to take this quick moment to recognize somebody else who is doing what they can to remove themselves from the comfort zone and go after what they want. Because this is my time and I can do what I wish with it. If you'll give me 1 second, I have to. Here we go, I found it. So this one strikes a little closer to home because it's within the home. But my fiance is also trying to leave the comfort zone. She is taking the steps to begin her full-time tidying business. For those of you familiar with the KonMari method and Marie Kondo and I really just need to have the title of this book right in front of me. She's laughing and rolling her eyes right now. It's something to the effect of The Joyful Art of Tidying Up. For those of you who are familiar with it, there is a certification class you can take. She has, and my fiance has gone through the steps, and she is now a professional tidier. She is certified. She has Marie Kondo signed off on her. She didn't do it personally. She didn't fly to Dallas and do it, but she signed off. And so now she's got her Instagram feed. She's got her Facebook page, and she is ready. And by the way, she's got a really nice computer that she can get on Zoom and work with you. Any of you. You, yes, right there. Yep, you. Yes, you with all that crap in your silverware drawer. There's a better way to organize it, and you don't need all of it. She can help you. Yeah, yes, you. I'm talking to you. Damn it. What you want to do, if you're curious about the ideas of KonMari or the ideas of being more organized and you don't know where to start, yes, you talk to a professional organizer. Yes, you pay the money because somebody else knows how to do it better than you, and they can do it disconnected, and they can do it in a way that will give you the tools to do it going forward. Her business, Mindful Tidying with Haley. I repeat, Mindful Tidying with Haley. Go ahead and search for that on Instagram. Mindful, MindFuel, Tidying, TIDYING with Haley, HAYLI. That's the toughest part. You can spell the word mindful. You can spell the word tidying. You can spell the word with. I sure as hell hope you can spell the word with. Haley, HAYLI, Mindful Tidying with Haley. That is my fiance's business. That is her as a professional tidier. And this is you looking at your clothing in your closet and saying, oh crap, I really probably could use a refresh and an organize on this. Another person who is leaving the comfort zone to go after what she wants, what makes her happy. Jessica Everett and my fiance, Mindful Tidying with Haley, very similar in that way. And that was my quick moment to my quick moment to pump sunshine over top of my lovely lady. Back to my interview with Jessica. I am absolutely ecstatic that we were able to spend that time talking. I so appreciate it. And it really is super cute that she texted me and like asked how the interview was going to be conducted. The last thing I'm having somebody do at 9 in the morning is be presentable, along with being on and passionate and speaking with such fervor. And this is not a job interview. This is two people swapping stories back and forth about good times and good drinks. That's all I wanted. And she gave me that and so much more. It was great. And I could sit here and tell you it was great, but you know it was great. You just got done listening to it. So if you take anything away from this, you take away that there's two people that are going after their dream and leaving the comfort zone. That Maui is a great place to stay, and that Esther's Fair Prospect is a great place to get a beverage. And I wish that places like that, with that kind of view and that kind of scenery, existed far closer and didn't require an 8-hour flight. Well, I guess if you want to get technical, they do. Because that place really did make me feel like I was at home. And I'm not, and I can't picture that there's one specific bar in local Dallas that makes me feel that way. But I'm sure there is. Kind of going off the rails here. It happens every now and then. If you continue to listen, you'll get used to it. And you'll grow to appreciate it. And you may very well create a drinking game because of it. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate you being part of this experience. If you want to, please do get on Spotify and go back and check out some previous episodes. There's a few interview shows, but there's also a few shows where it's just me. All new, all different, all of the above is kind of a fun mix of the two. I will give you interviews here and there, but I will give you a lot of content and a lot of cathartic and or therapeutic stuff that's been on my mind of late. And I made the goal to all of you and to myself to make 15 of these for this year. Once upon a time, I did 52 shows a year. Now I'm just struggling to make 15, and you know what? I'm going to do better. This was show number 3. Show number 4 will be a lot sooner. So stick around. Stay tuned. It's coming at you sooner than later, I swear. With that being said, one more time, thank you to Jessica Everett of Esther's Fair Prospect. Go ahead and look for them on Instagram, look for them on Facebook, and look for them in Wailuku if you just happen to be in Maui. And yes, Also, follow Mindful Tidying with Haley on Instagram. Whenever you're ready to admit that you need help organizing and tidying your home and your mental space as a result of your home, find her. She will help you. And it's worth the money. Trust, it's worth the money. We will do this again soon. And soon after that, and soon after that, and soon after that. My name is Hank. This has been all new, all different, all of the above. May there be a next time. I say till next time.